From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Labor unions descend on the Capitol to protest policies they say hurt working people.
Always remember the words of our beloved Mother Jones, who said to pray for the dead and fight like hell for the living. Fight on, AFSCME.
A bill requiring drug felons to undergo drug treatment before receiving welfare benefits has opponents saying it's just another obstacle for the poor.
I think it's a mean-spirited bill. I don't think the sponsor is any way mean-spirited. I think he means well. But I think the impact on this bill is going to be very difficult for people trying to re-enter into the workforce.
Some middle school students tell a Senate panel about the dangers of cyberbullying. And if you want to be a Gator or a Seminole, be prepared to pay even more for it. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Hundreds of government workers rallied in Tallahassee to protest what they call a war on the middle class. James Call reports members of the labor union representing state, county, and city employees roamed the halls of the state capitol to talk to lawmakers about policies they say favor the wealthy at the expense of working people.
State workers are not the enemy!
About 300 members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees gathered Tuesday morning on the Capitol steps. Some had left their homes the night before and rode buses from Miami and Collier County to be part of the event. Veteran organizer Barbara Devane was the last in a handful of speakers to address the group before members started lobbying lawmakers.
Always remember the words of our beloved Mother Jones, who said, to pray for the dead and fight like hell for the living. Fight on, AFSCME.
What AFSCME members are fighting against is an economic policy supported by the Republican leadership of the legislature and articulated by Governor Rick Scott.
By lowering taxes and reducing regulations, we can create a competitive advantage for Florida businesses, allowing them to grow and put more Floridians to work. By embracing the competitive spirit and principles of limited government, we can keep the cost of living low for Floridians.
Scott says his mission is to reduce the cost of living and doing business in Florida. He has championed tax cuts, slashed government spending, and eliminated state jobs. Judah Tolbert has worked 10 years for the Department of Health in Sarasota. She explains the impact of those policy decisions on state employees like herself.
Well, the big thing is always the raise that we haven't gotten in 6 or 7 years, depending on who you talk to. And the fact that they took 3% last year. So I'm basically making less than when I was even originally hired.
The 2010 election of Rick Scott in a more Republican-dominated legislature launched Florida on a limited government experiment. The state budget lawmakers are working on for next year will be about $4 billion smaller than the 06 budget when the Great Recession began. Florida has grown by more than a million people since then, and the legislature has reduced spending on education, health care, other government services, and unemployment benefits. AFSCME and its allies, like the AFL-CIO, say it is these kinds of policies that amount to attack on workers in the middle class. Rich Templin is with the AFL-CIO.
And we're still dealing with the biggest problem of all, a woefully inadequate tax and revenue system, where right now the poorest 20% of income earners in the state are paying a tax rate of 13.9% in state and local taxes. The middle income paying 12.5%. The top 1% in the state of Florida are currently paying 2.1% in state and local taxes combined. We've got $5 billion in corporate tax loopholes and special giveaways. While they're saying we can't balance the budget, so we got to take it out on the backs of our teachers, firefighters, and state employees.
Leaders in the legislature treat almost any talk of a tax increase as a third rail of Florida politics. Touch it, and your career is over. To try to change minds, AFSCME members clad in green shirts lobbied their hometown senators and representatives in their Tallahassee offices.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
Sam Niemeyer and six other panhandle government workers crowd into Pensacola Republican Senator Greg Evers' office.
And we're here to talk about how we appreciate his consideration on that privatization vote.
Okay.
Evers had voted against a plan to privatize 18 South Florida prisons. Unions had opposed the measure, saying it would have eliminated jobs. The Senate defeated the proposal, The group didn't get to meet with Evers, but had a few minutes with his aide, Mike Bascom.
Do you have any information that you want to share with him, a packet or anything that we can provide?
The group's message is that the middle class is in trouble. A 2011 report by the Pew Charitable Trust says a third of those who grew up in the middle class have slipped down the income ladder as an adult. AFSCME and others say it is because of what they call anti-government policies like the ones pursued by the legislature. Darryl Borowitz is a retired state employee. He explains how he thinks the Republican-controlled legislature has tipped the state's economic policies in favor of the wealthy.
I go to Doak Campbell Stadium to see an FSU football game. I pay tax on the seat I sit on. Up in the sky boxes, guess who sits up there? Are there taxes up there? No. I have a little John boat. I pay taxes on it. When you go on a charter boat, do you pay taxes on that? No. Guess who goes on charter boats? On and on and on. There are ways to get revenues in this state where there will be no deficit in this state, but nobody has the courage and the leadership and the vision to go after that.
Destin Republican Senator Don Gates is in line to become the Senate president after the November election. He supports a policy of reducing taxes and government spending. He says it sounds like much of the critique of the legislature's economic policy originated in the White House.
Actually, what the middle class people who I work with and talk to and see in church and see at the grocery store every week tell me is that they don't want to have government having a bigger slice of the pie at a time when small businesses, and they truly are the middle class, are trying to struggle to their feet. So while the Obama campaign put scripts in the hands of AFSCME and other unions saying that there's a war on the middle class, I think the war on the middle class is being waged by those who want government to take a bigger slice out of the middle class wage earner's pocket. And as Republicans, we oppose that.
When told of Gates' remarks, one AFSCME member said she wasn't surprised, and that is why she and others were walking the halls of the Capitol and introducing themselves to lawmakers. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
A bill that would deny convicted drug felons from receiving temporary cash assistance unless they go through a drug rehabilitation program is now heading for a House floor vote. But as Sasha Cordner reports, the measure is getting staunch opposition from Democrats who claim the bill is mean-spirited.
Republican Representative Jimmy Smith of Lecanto says it's the perfect way for the state of Florida to show that its officials are willing to help those who help themselves.
HB 813 puts Florida back in line with federal law and disqualifies those with drug felon from receiving temporary cash assistance or food assistance unless they show completion of a drug abuse or substance abuse regimen. Money will be received by a protected payee in the case of a parent or guardian not successfully completing a drug abuse or substance abuse regimen.
But though his bill received little objection from the public, lawmakers on the House Health and Human Services Committee became very vocal. Out of the 18-member panel, only 5 did not speak for or against the bill. The other 13 wanted their voices to be heard, including the opposition.
I'm recognizing that we are continuing to put additional obstacles in the way of getting people back to work, getting families back on track, and making sure that we as a community are in a stronger position. I think we can do those things without creating obstacles.
Democratic Representative Mia Jones is referring to legislation that Smith sponsored last year that requires all temporary assistance for needy families or TANF applicants to have a drug test before receiving any welfare dollars. The American Civil Liberties Union of Florida has since then challenged the law, and it's currently under litigation in federal court. In addition to Jones, Smith's current bill, House Bill 813, received little support from other Democrats like Representative Mark Pafford of West Palm Beach. He says he doesn't like that the bill presumes that all poor people have a problem and will use dollars in an inappropriate way, especially those convicted of a drug crime.
I think it's a mean-spirited bill. I don't think the sponsor is any way mean-spirited. I think he means well. But I think the impact on this bill is going to be very difficult for people trying to reenter into the workforce.
But Republican Representative John Wood of Haines City says the bill is a no-brainer.
We're setting an example here of what we expect when we were trying to aid needy families, that we don't want those parents on drugs. It's just very, very simple. And so it's not mean-spirited. it's uplifting.
Democratic Representative Janet Cruz says drug testing bills like this one are just an excuse to make drug testing companies wealthier and is not in the best interest of Floridians.
I feel like what we've created here is an avenue to make drug testing companies very successful.
However, Republican Representative Ronald Wenyard says he's sure all Floridians can see a need for the bill.
Let's go back to what this really is. This is taxpayer money. And if you went and you asked the taxpayers, would you want your dollars spent in this fashion or not? I think they would agree with this bill.
The House Health and Human Services Committee passed the bill 12-6 along party lines. The bill now heads to the House floor. Its Senate companion, Senate Bill 1128, is expected to be heard Wednesday in its second committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the University of Florida and Florida State University could soon be free of the state's tuition caps.
I just don't feel comfortable voting for a bill that, quite frankly, could raise tuition 30 or 40% each and every year.
If there's an organization that does a lot of the same thing as a union, the question is, does that make it a union?
I could walk, I could swim, and if I wanted to make people laugh, I can quack, but I'm not a duck. So even though I can have a lot of the similar characteristics as one, I ultimately don't have the one distinct characteristic that makes me a duck.
And middle school youngsters take Florida senators to school on the issue of cyberbullying.
My friend was cyberbullied for a few weeks, and after she couldn't take it anymore, she killed herself.
All right, let's hear those fight songs. If you want to be a Gator or a Seminole, it could soon cost you a lot of money. Students at two of the state's largest universities could see tuition bills more in line with those at other top-tiered schools in the nation. Lynn Hatter reports a proposal to allow the schools to break free of the state's tuition cap is now making its way through the legislature.
Universities that meet 11 out of 14 benchmarks would be able to increase tuition above and beyond the state's 15% a year cap. A proposal by Republican Representative Bill Proctor creates state universities of academic and research excellence and national preeminence. The designation is for schools with large numbers of students with high SAT and GPA scores, a six-year graduation rate of 70% or more, and a high number of patents and graduates with doctoral degrees.
Scope of the first PCB is intentionally narrow to address the legislature's expectations of high-performing research institutions.
Under Proctor's bill, only Florida State and the University of Florida currently meet the designation of a state university of academic and research excellence, and therefore only those two schools would be able to aim for that national tuition standard. It's something the schools have pushed for a very long time. The move also has the endorsement of Florida Board of Governors Chancellor Frank Brogan, who has long said the universities can't all be treated the same way.
We continue to treat all 11 as though they are the same. They're not. They are very different institutions, and they should be, but they should be allowed the flexibility to be what they are.
After several years of tuition hikes, the cost of attending a public university in Florida remains far below the national average, which is about $15,000 a year. The state's tuition rate is currently a third of that. FSU and UF could raise tuition rates up to 30 to 40% a year, with the money going for things like lowering teacher-student ratios, attracting nationally known scholars, and funding expensive programs in science, technology, engineering, and math. Both universities have also said charging higher tuition rates will help them climb higher in national rankings. But not everyone thinks letting the schools break out of the state's tuition cap is a good idea.
And when I look at a bill like this and I look at the tuition increases in our budget, it looks to me like the legislature has decided that it was not going to properly fund a higher education system. And the way to recoup the money was to put it on the backs of our hardworking students who are already struggling as it is.
Representative Martin Kerr, a Broward Democrat, says he's also worried about a part of the bill that would let the schools charge families for the difference in tuition, even after they've locked in a prepaid tuition rate through a savings plan.
And what this does is it makes it even more expensive for these people. And I think eventually it'll make this great program, something that so many of us rely on for our children, obsolete. And that gives me grave concern.
And although she voted for the bill, Republican Representative Kelly Stargell says she's worried the schools could lose their focus and price out qualified Florida students as they chase the national tuition average and higher rankings.
I support the bill. I support the opportunity, but I'd also challenge the universities to be cognizant of the population we have here in the state and recognizing that we want our best and brightest to stay here.
Fellow Republican Representative John Tobia of Melbourne said for the time being he couldn't support the proposal because of a lack of input from the state's other 9 universities and students.
I just don't feel comfortable voting for a bill that, quite frankly, could raise tuition 30 or 40% each and every year when we're already increasing it at the staggering rate of 15%. I think that we need to place the students they attend these institutions over the institutions themselves.
The Florida Board of Governors would still sign off on all tuition hikes outside what the legislature sets, and it's not a done deal. It must clear both chambers and gain approval from Governor Rick Scott, who has said he is opposed to any tuition increase. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. Lawmakers are considering a proposal that would let certain groups represent teachers without registering as a teachers' union as long as they don't participate in collective bargaining. Some say the move would give teachers more options, but Regan McCarthy reports others call it union busting.
Representative Jeff Brandis says his bill would protect teachers and give them more options for legal representation.
Union membership has been dropping from the 50s, since the 50s. And we are today in a world where many teachers want to be in a profession, want to have protection, but do not want to have to join a collective bargaining organization in order to have that protection. They want choice. They want options. They can join Penn. They can get a rider on their homeowner's insurance. They can do a lot of different things to give them those options. But we should not be limiting those options. We should be encouraging those options.
The Professional Educators Network of Florida, or PEN, is a non-union teachers organization that doesn't participate in collective bargaining, but wants to be able to offer teachers legal representation. But Representative Martin Kerr, a Democrat from Davie, says he doesn't think it's fair for an organization that does everything except collective bargaining to be treated differently.
What PEN and the professional teacher associations want to do is they want to do all those other things under Chapter 447 except collectively bargain, but do not want to be subjected to the requirements of Chapter 447. They don't want to be subjected to the checks and balances to make sure that they're acting fairly. They don't want to be subjected to Chapter 447 so that there's another check to ensure that they're doing what's right for our teachers and for our children. They don't want that.
PEN officials argue the group is offering teachers services they want. The organization doesn't want to be a union and says because it doesn't participate in collective bargaining, it shouldn't have to register as one. Representative Dwight Bullard, a Democrat from Miami, says he doesn't have a problem with competition between unions, but says the measure creates a gray area. Bullard says if something walks like a duck, it just might be one.
If any of us were walking around and we saw a feathered animal with a beak, with fins, that can swim and can fly, we'd automatically assume it was a duck. But in this case, we're ignoring all those facts. If you want to be a true competing interest, it's not to say that there can't be another employee organization and or union that comes to the table here in the state of Florida. But if that's what you want to do, then do it.
But Representative Eric Frezen, a Republican from Miami, disagrees with that assessment.
The distinct characteristic that makes up a union is their ability and their exercising in the collective bargaining process. And if you don't do that, you may do a lot of similar things. To go kind of on your analogy, I could walk, I could swim, and if I wanted to make people laugh, I can quack. But I don't. But I'm not a duck. So even though I can have a lot of the similar characteristics as one, I ultimately don't have the one distinct characteristic that makes me a duck, being a duck.
The measure passed through the House Education Committee. Next, it moves to the House floor. Meanwhile, a measure with similar provisions passed through the Senate Education Pre-K through 12 Committee. It has 2 more committee stops to go. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
The Senate Governmental Oversight and Accountability Committee will hear a bill that would make car racing an official state symbol, sponsored, of course, by a Daytona Beach state senator, Evelyn Lynn. The panel also hears measures related to health care license suspension and autism. The Senate Criminal Justice Committee will consider legislation that would prevent drug felons from receiving temporary cash assistance or food assistance. The House meets on Wednesday and will consider adding new compounds to the state drug laws. It's an effort to stay ahead of drug dealers who have used chemistry to make new drugs that technically aren't illegal. The House also will consider a bill cracking down on internet cafes. Also up in the House are bills that allow advertising on school buses and one that would ban funeral protest within a certain distance. That's the Daybook for Wednesday, February 22nd.
Finally, at just about every legislative committee meeting in Tallahassee, there will be lobbyists lining up to speak for or against various bills. Tom Flanagan reports there was a unique group of lobbyists today before the Senate K-12 Education Committee.
Committee member Bill Monford, Democrat from Tallahassee, rose to explain his bill.
This particular bill provides School District Florida with the option of adopting a Cyberbullying Awareness Week annually on the third week of September. This Awareness Week will promote awareness of cyberbullying and increasing attention to identify and prevent cyberbullying and offering students ways to respond appropriately and to report incidents to school officials.
For too many young people today, the internet has become a threatening and painful place. It's routine for kids to attack each other online. This sometimes escalates to physical violence and even suicide. There have been studies to document this and many experts talking about it. But perhaps those most intimately aware of cyberbullying and its impact are young people.
Good morning. We are Mr. Gerard's 7th grade civics class from Raw Middle School. I am Shelby Norwood and these are my classmates.
Hello, my name is Imani Thomas and this bill is about cyberbullying and Stalking Awareness Week.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Nguyen. And I'm 13 years old.
Hi, my name is Patricia Prather. I'm 13 years old, and I support the cyberbullying bill.
Hello, my name is Lily Nguyen. I'm 13, and I support the bill.
Hi, my name is Jabari DeGraff, and I'm from Raw Middle School.
Hi, my name is Colin Berno. I'm 13 years old. I go to Raw Middle School, and I support this bill.
My name is Michael McCullough. I'm 13 years old, and I support the bill.
Students speaking before the committee included Amari Thomas.
Cyberbullying may lead to depression, insecurity, and suicidal thoughts. A lot of children or teens don't know exactly what cyberbullying is, but once we start this week, they'll realize the severity of cyberbullying, and they'll think to themselves, wow, if there's a whole week dedicated to cyberbullying, it must be a very important subject.
Lily Nguyen shared a personal experience.
I have been cyberbullied, and I have been a cyberbully. When you cyberbully someone, sometimes you don't think about it or what you're doing until you do it. I messaged a girl on Facebook, and let's just say the message wasn't very nice. Now, you might ask, what did you get out of cyberbullying? Well, that's a good question, but the thing is, I didn't get anything out of it. When I cyberbullied the girl, it wasn't that I wanted to. It was out of anger and rage.
Patricia Prather told members that cyberbullying can have a fatal outcome.
My friend was cyberbullied for a few weeks, and after she couldn't take it anymore, she killed herself. She ended her life in education too early because of the people who cyberbullied. I want this to become a law and honor my friend to show how much she means to me.
Michael McCullough told lawmakers that he believes awareness and education are the best weapons against the cyberbullying scourge.
The reason this bill is important is because it helps people learn about what cyberbullying can do to someone. The bill also provides information to what cyberbullying is and how to stop it. The Cyberbullying Week allows students to be provided with intensive instruction to expand their knowledge and understanding of what cyberbullying is and how it can hurt someone.
Of course, given the cost-cutting priorities of this legislative session, the big question about any issue is, where's the money going to come from? Republican committee member Ellen Bogdanoff of Fort Lauderdale assured her colleagues that was not a concern in this case.
We did put in the budget, in proviso language, that the safe school dollars, which is the trigger to make sure that districts actually address bullying, and cyberbullying in particular, that it specifically stated that they could use it for educational purposes and that they have to show that they are complying with the new law. So there hopefully will be money for them to actually do some of the things and to educate the kids, because once they're educated, I think we'll have less of it.
Senator Monford's bill sailed through the committee without a single no vote. Afterward, he thanked his young supporters.
You're very, very good examples of why we're here, and you make us think real hard before we make some tough decisions. So thank you for being here, and we look forward to some of you, maybe all of you, being up here one day.
And in a town awash with lobbyists and advocates, the 8 middle school youngsters certainly distinguished themselves as among the most sincere and well-behaved. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.